Howdy all, this is Shane. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. Today I'm going to just be talking about home recording and home studio recording and the stuff that I've learned over the years doing it myself. I've produced a number of albums for myself now and one in the works, which is almost finished. I keep saying almost finished, but we keep, I keep adding better vocals to it. That's the intention. Anyway, we'll get to some of the trials and tribulations a bit later. But doing it yourself is definitely worth learning. If you are a musician and you take it semi-seriously, then it's well worth getting into it. I think it's a fun hobby to enjoy as well. Recording your own stuff not only benefits yourself, but long term it actually saves you money. Given your first few results when you record won't be great, you'll just be learning in the mixing process, you'll tend to over compress stuff and make things sound a little bit more tinny or bassy than it needs to be, but you learn this stuff as you go. Some people have better ears than others as well, so getting into it, you might already know what you like, but you'll have to learn a lot. But there are some shortcuts as well, which we'll get to as well. There's so much to talk about. It's a really involved subject, and I'll tell you where I'm at right now, and then we'll go back in time. So right now, I've produced an EP or an album. I'm not too sure yet. I've ditched two tracks, so it falls in about eight or nine tracks, somewhere around there. So I'm not sure if that's an album or EP these days, but anyway, I thought I had it finished. I sang my ass off. I tried to do my best. I hadn't been doing any singing much at all, maybe once every 2 weeks or something. So I was right out of practice. But the results I got, I could listen to back and I thought, yeah, this is actually pretty good. I've been mixing music for a long time. I've done a lot of my own albums and lots of other people's live albums and studio albums as well. So that part of it wasn't too tricky, but when I gave someone a listen to it, the first thing they said is, yeah, and you actually sing these songs better live than what you do on the album, which kind of like, oh no. So my first suggestion is if you do any recording, have someone that you trust give you honest feedback. You can also give it to someone you don't have a lot of trust in to say, what do you think of this? And they can give you some feedback. I'm lucky in my band, my friend Mark, who is a fantastic engineer and a drummer, he's produced a lot of albums too, so we bounce a lot of stuff back and forth. For me, the most time-consuming part is just getting the parts right and to meet my own standards. I hear a lot of music that people produce, even like way better musos than me, but they don't put any effort into it. They just do stuff once. And I mean, look, that can work. If you're playing live, live albums are great like that. I've done a live album. Hit record and go. You know, there's not a whole lot of tweaking to do afterwards. Maybe just the odd vocal cover up here and there if you need it. But yeah, live albums are great that way. But in the studio, you've got a bit more flexibility to do whatever you like. So come up with the best parts that you can for those songs. Don't just noodle around. I think that's the mistake a lot of people make in terms of blues albums especially, is sort of cluttering it up too much or adding a little bit too much or sort of not utilizing more than one take too. I mean, if you're a gun muso, I know Clapton and guys like that have recorded in a studio without having overdubs, but for the home guy like me, who I play live in a band but I'm not a studio guy, I like to create parts that move and go somewhere. So all my guitar solos, 30, 40 takes of trying to feel where to go, how to do it, and then, executing it the way that feels great for the music. And that just takes time for someone like me. So for me to go and pay someone for studio time, it's just not an option. I'd rather have the flexibility to do it on my own time rather than spend all day and getting anxious with someone else. So that's a really good reason for people to get into it if you're not overly confident but you want to produce your own music. And maybe capable is the word, not confident. I'm a confident guy. I'm just not as capable in a studio situation as, the pros. So yeah, I look at it that way. I can take my time, build my ideas up, have other people contribute, friends that are great musicians, and also just spend time getting things right. As I was mentioning before, I did finish the vocal takes, and then the last 3 days, I've been doing them all again, which was sort of like a kick in the groin or whatever you want to say. It was tough, but I'm glad I did it. It took me... Let's go back again, because basically when you record stuff for the first time, you're new to it. I remember holding my words up. I had them on a on a piece of, you know, a thing holding my lyrics, a lyric sheet. And I was reading it as I was singing. And now I know the songs that well and what I'm trying to do vocally, that I could get through it a lot faster. I did three takes and each day for 3 days. And by the third day, I kept basically one whole take minus a few parts, which I chopped from the other take. So it became a lot easier. I didn't need lyrics. I knew what I was trying to do. And it actually became easier. I've been trying to push myself to sing in different keys and sort of sing a lot higher in some areas as well. And that's just something that came with practice. So if you are going to record and you're not a strong singer or strong guitar player, just do it over and over and over again. Some of the best learning I do or have in the past is when I go to record. It's the ideas that come to you when you're noodling around. You think, oh, I'm onto something here. Let's work with that and extend it to fit the part. So parts are, you know, independent parts for songs. I look at it like funk music. Funk's just fantastic. It's got the drums and the bass. Everything's in its own little window of space. You know, you got the horns, you got the guitar. Nothing's just cluttering everything up. There's just none of that. So I try to think like that when I come up with my songs. The initial idea might not be like that. I might just have a basic guitar groove, but once it's recorded, then I can go back and actually execute some parts. And same with the vocals. I'm still not the strongest vocalist in the world, but I absolutely love pushing myself and trying to meet my own standards. So if you're someone that would like to spend a lot of time learning something new, then home studio recording's fantastic. So let's get into some of the stuff that you might require to get this done. These days, you don't need a lot. And I had a studio at one point, and I had lots of rack gear, all this other stuff. You just don't really need it. So what I would suggest doing is getting a desktop, you know, like a, not a laptop so much, but an actual desktop, and a USB 3 drive just for your storage, and you can back it up somewhere else. But that's plenty. You don't really need much more than that. Get some studio monitors as well. Now, people say you shouldn't buy studio monitors over a certain size, but just get whatever you like. I've got KRK Rocket 8s, which I've had for probably 10 years almost now, and I'm so used to them, I know exactly where the sweet spot is on the lows. What I mean by that is, any studio monitor you buy, you're going to think, oh, wow, the mix sounds fantastic. Let's put it in the car or on a, you know, our home stereo system. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't sound any good. So the trick is to, you're going to have to learn whatever speakers you get. And it's a funny thing to say that to some, to over the podcast or two people, is when you buy a set of studio monitors, you're going to have to just stick with them and make sure that you'll sort of fine tune your ear to get the right kind of sound. I know not to overextend the lows on my particular speakers, because if I put it in the car, it's going to sound really bass heavy. So it just depends on the song too. For some dance stuff I've mastered for other people, that's okay. But for the music that I do, like the live music, then yeah, you definitely don't want to, or you definitely want to learn the speakers. So whichever ones you buy, you'll get a sense of what sounds good on those that will then sound great on everything else. The next thing to do is to get some sort of recording program. There's so many of these out right now that you can just take your pick. There's Cubase, Nuendo, which is what I use. I used to use Adobe Audition 3, which was a really awesome, easy to use program. I'd highly recommend that to people who are just getting into it. There's just lots of stuff. So there's Pro Tools, depending on if you're a Mac guy or a PC guy, but you know, it doesn't really matter. I think it just comes down to, any of them are fine. It's whatever you learn. None sound better than any other, and plugins work on all of them. So if you're concerned and you think, I have to get Pro Tools, you don't need to get Pro Tools. You just absolutely don't. Check out Cubase or Nuendo. I think they're both, you know, as good or better and easy to use as well. Nuendo's fantastic. It's the most stable program I've ever had. It's fantastic. So definitely check Cubase and Nuendo. It's basically the same program. So Cubase is definitely worth doing. Sony Vegas Pro, which is the video editing suite, and it's also an audio suite as well. And Sony also make designated audio suites. It's all good. I've used them all. I used Vegas for all my YouTube videos, and it's something else. So don't stress. Get whatever you can afford. And in terms of hardware, get what you need. So if you don't need something with 16 inputs. Don't buy something with 16 inputs. If you need two, get something with four, because sometimes you might have a friend over and you might be doing something together where you might need two guitars and two mics. If that's not a situation that you require, then just get a two XLR or mic input one, because that's, you don't want to go any smaller than that. Any smaller than that and you're really restricting yourself. You might want to use two microphones for your guitar, for example. If you've got only one mic slot, it's just not going to work. So buy what you need. For me, I don't want to have a computer with me anytime I record, and that kind of sounds weird, but what I do, I take two 16-track Zoom R16 recorders where I go and I sync them up together. So I've essentially got 16 tracks that I can record live and then transport the audio from that back to the computer and then do the mixing from there. You don't actually need a computer to be doing mixing, but it is a lot better. It just absolutely is. All the plugins just, it makes a world of difference. So once you've got the software sorted out, start looking for microphones. I'm talking into a Rode NT1 microphone. This is a condenser mic. It records via phantom power. So if you do want a condenser microphone, they sound a whole lot better for acoustic instruments, with the exception of drums, unless using them as an overhead. They can work in different situations. They actually, this one sounds fantastic for electric guitar as well. I've shot a lot of my demos with it. And I also use this as a second microphone on a guitar amp as well. So look for what you need to record and do some research before you go and buy anything. There's so many great videos of mics on YouTube or audio samples on the internet and just stuff that you'll need to read. So if you don't know the difference between a dynamic and a condenser microphone, then look into that and you'll hear a huge difference. If I was talking through a dynamic microphone now, like a live style microphone, it wouldn't sound anywhere near as good. And this is a, you know, inexpensive, roughly inexpensive microphone from Rode. It's their sort of entry level. And I've used this on all my vocal takes. Now, I haven't got it right here. It's over there at the moment. But I usually use my Rode NT2A, which, you know, it's hundreds of dollars more for all my vocal takes. I actually like the sound of this one. It suits my voice better. If you can go to a shop that has mics set up where you can talk through them and listen into headphones or sing through them or whatever, definitely give that a shot. I was lucky enough when I first was looking for a really high-quality condenser microphone that the shop at the time let me use it and, you know, test them out and A/B if against a few. And I knew when I made that purchase that I'd have that microphone in 10 years. And it's still over there. I've had it since my first album, which given didn't sound that great, but I've had it since then and it's still going strong now. And I use it all the time. It sounds fantastic. You'll see it on the podcast as well. It's that silver one that I use here. So yeah, it's just a great microphone and it's something that I'll never get rid of because it always comes in handy. And having a second one like this too is, you know, instrumental in getting good sounds sometimes as well. Now for drums, if you are miking up a drum kit and you want to record drums live, then you probably need something with at least 8 tracks, maybe more, that you can record simultaneously. Now you can record to an external hardware device, like is what I do, into the Zoom R16, or you can buy like an interface for a computer like a Motu 8 Pre, or there's a million others that you could get that you could then sort of cascade two of them together and run that straight into the computer. So it's up to you how you want to record. So the reason I don't record directly with or to a computer when I'm doing the drums and bass tracks or when I'm doing a live album is because low frequencies can sometimes shock the hard drive. And what I mean by that is you'll lose a second or two before, you know, the pin that reads or executes the data on the drive finds its way again. So it can actually sort of shock the drive. So that's one reason. If you've got a solid state hard drive, you're not going to have that problem. But most people don't yet. Well, I guess most people might. I don't know. I've got one in as my operating system drive, but not one for a designated storage drive. They're just not big enough. So it depends on how much room you've got. If you want to record directly to a computer, you can do that. Just make sure it's not too close to the drums. Like I said, you don't want your hard drive getting shocked. And it will be fine. It just, that's one of those things that happens. And I had a portable recorder that had a traditional hard drive in it as well. And same thing happened to that. As soon as it went to solid state media, I was fine. So SD cards are great to record to. You know, get a 16 or 32 gig one of those. You'll have ample room to, you know, record as much as you like. The way that I record, I make sure everyone's got a set of headphones on, and the guitar that I'm playing is being recorded only as a guide track, just straight through the desk, so the audio quality is not very good of the guitar, but it doesn't need to be. Our focus is knowing where the parts are, and also me talking into a microphone, so everyone can hear me talk with their headphones on, and as we get to different sections, I'll yell at chorus or, you know, bridge or whatever, and we'll go there. We'll bring it down, make it louder. On the next one, go hard, that kind of thing. So that's how I record. We basically mic up the drum kit. We have enough mics on there that it will give me flexibility to mix it however I like, and also a room mic if we can sometimes. Not always, but I'd like to have a room mic on there just in case. The bass is also being recorded line in. We don't use amps for the bass. And some of the plugins you can get to make bass guitars sound fantastic are just amazing. So check out the CLA plugins from Waves. I've used them all over my new album, and it's the best sounding album that hasn't been released. So I hope it is once I get it out. My last album, I took a lot of time to get right, and I was really happy with the sound. I think it stood up well against albums that I've got, you know, behind me here. But the new one, I think, is in a class of its own in terms of it just doesn't sound home studio. It's just a little bit too good. So I'm glad I was sort of pushed in the direction of trying to re-record my vocals. I'm all done with that now. I'm totally shot. I've spent 3 days doing it, and I think I've got enough stuff now to get it done. It's the best I can do right now, and I could spend forever wanting the sound in here to come out of my mouth, but it's just, it's not quite there yet. I'm working on it. I have been working on my vocals, but it's a painful, painful process. But the best thing about it is doing it on your own. You can spend time, you can make mistakes, you can, you know, do things over and over until you're happy with it. So yeah, just keep that in mind. If you're paying someone by the hour, that might take a long, long time, or you might end up running out of money and getting something that's not quite right. So that's another thing to think of as well. If you are recording a band, you'll probably need a good 6 to 10 microphones. And it's not essential, but you'll need one great vocal mic. You'll need a kick drum microphone. A couple of pencil condenser microphones is fine for overheads on the drums. A snare drum microphone, SM57, is fine. You can buy drum packs that have 7 mics. Put one on each tom as well. There's just so many options for microphones, so do a bit of research. And today's standard of microphone, even coming out of China, is really quite good. So there's not a whole lot of junk out there. Just make sure you do your research and have a good read. There's so many audio forums that will hammer stuff that's crap and praise things that are good. And also listen to things on YouTube. I can't stress that enough. In regards to the mixing, you just need to make sure that you listen to it on your home studio, a DAW, and make sure it sounds good. Take it to your car, take it to your friend's place. You know, just to have a listen to the dry mix. And mastering's a whole other thing. So once the mix is done and you render that file out, you want to basically make it sound consistent on everything. That's what mastering does. It makes things sound nicer. You can overmaster things as well, and then it sounds crap. But if you master correctly, it should sound warm and rich and round and full and clear and without sizzle. It should just sound good and even on almost anything that you put the CD or MP3 on. So that's the trick to mastering. A great example of this, in my opinion, is John Mayer's Continuum album. I think that sounds great on every situation. If you've got it in your car, it sounds great. If you've got it on at home, it sounds great. That's the trick. If you're hearing it at a supermarket, when you're doing your groceries, whatever, it still sounds fine. You can tell instantly what it is, and even on crap speakers, it'll still sound good. So that's the trick of mastering. That's what mastering will do. It'll make it consistent. Don't be too frightened of trying the mix 100 times. I think the only way you're going to learn this stuff is to do it. You can read up on the forums and find out which frequencies to boost on or which frequencies to cut on certain instruments. That's good knowledge to have too. But when it comes to mixing, your ears are your best friend. So just do it that way, and you'll learn straight away. If you take it to your car and you go, man, it's way too bassy, then you know your studio speakers might be EQ'd a little differently. So that means you got to pull the lows out of the mix a little bit and try it again until everything works well. So it's a really long, painful process, but it's definitely worth the rewards at the end. This album, I wasn't sure I was going to get it pressed, but if it turns up half as well as what I hope, then I'm definitely going to get it done. It's a little different, and I'm not sure why I'm going to get it pressed either, because I almost feel like I don't sell too many of my albums now. I have sold quite a few of the live albums online, so thanks to everyone who's... and Another Rainy Day, I did sell a lot of those albums as well initially, but I'm not really gigging that much, so I might just do a short run of like 100 or something and give them out to friends and just make them available in a limited edition or something like that. I'm not too sure yet, but yeah, getting impressed and doing the artwork for the CD is a whole other thing as well. I do everything, so I've had help with artwork over the years, which is has been a huge help, but I did Another Rainy Day, my last album, and the live album all by myself, and this next one will be all by myself as well. So it does require a little bit of technical knowledge, maybe more patience than anything. It's nothing that you can't learn. I never knew Photoshop until I started doing this stuff. Now I understand it a whole lot better. I'm still not a master at it, but I've learned so much more. And same with mixing. I can be given, you know, a CD from someone to play some guitar on, and the first thing I hear is the mix, and I think, I would not mix it like that. So my ear's pretty finely tuned. Another great way to tell if your mix is good is chuck on a CD that's comparable to the music that you're producing. So if you're a rock band, you love the Chili Peppers, have a listen to those guys. If you're a blues guy, chuck on some Clapton or even some old school stuff as well. The old school stuff sounds great. Robert Cryer, all those guys, they all have great mixing engineers and mastering engineers as well. So compare your CD to other CDs. It's not so much about how loud it is all the time either. It just has to sound good. Don't over-compress the master. I think, you know, there's times where you listen to the original Dire Straits Brothers in Arms album that was on CD. It was then re-released, and they over-compressed it, and it's horrible. It lost all of its dynamics. So the original ones just sounds a whole lot better. There's a lot of examples of this. If you want to see what... the problems are with mastering, type in the Loudness War CD into Google. That will explain everything about it. So this is a huge, huge topic. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them as well. Or head over to intheblues.net. There's a forum over there now, and it has a particular section for, you know, recording, home studio recording, all that kind of stuff. So I'd be more than happy to answer over there or on the YouTube video as well. Thanks again for watching, and don't forget, check out my shop at intheblues.com.au, and the forum is at intheblues.net. My name's Shane, thanks for listening, and I hope this was of some value to people. And yeah, let the last part of this process for me finally be done with, and then I can start doing the artwork, or finalize the artwork. I'm still playing around with it at the moment. It's all about vibe, you know. The vibe of the vocals sounds good, the vibe of the guitars and drums and bass and everything clicks in right, the vibe of the artwork is good, then I'm happy. So that's what I'm striving for, and I want to be able to listen to it without cringing and going, man, I wish I had done that again. It's the worst thing in the world.